When I walk in the club, all eyes on me. I'm with the Party Rock crew, all drinks are free. We like Ciroc, we love Patron. We came to party rock, everybody is on. Shots, 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 shots.
That's Lord paying tribute to alcohol, and he isn't alone. Going back to the Andrews Sisters, rum and Coca-Cola, booze has been a part of American music. Patron, Hennessy, Jack Daniels, and Cristal are just a few of the brands that get name-checked by pop artists. Now a new study shows a correlation between teens who listen to songs with alcohol references and those teens' drinking patterns. Is it a case of teens who already drink, seeking out music that matches their lifestyles, or is it that listening to songs about drinking makes a kid more likely to indulge? Joining us to talk about it is Dr. Brian Primack, who is with the University of Pittsburgh School of Medicine. Also with us, Renee Hobbs, who is with the University of Rhode Island. Thank you both for being with us. Dr. Primack, let's start first of all. What does this study show?
Well, what we did was we assessed 2,500 young people, and we basically grouped them into three categories in terms of how much they like and own music with alcohol brand references. So there was a low group, a medium group, and a high group. And then we were able to compare those groups in terms of their proportion of binge drinking. And we found that compared with those in the low group, those in the high group had about twice the odds of ever binging, even after adjusting for all the covariates that we normally want to look at, things like sensation-seeking, like rebelliousness, in order to make sure that this really was an independent association.
And I mean, wouldn't it make sense that if kids are, you know, bigger alcohol consumers, that they'd be more apt to listen to songs that are reflective of that?
Absolutely. It very well may be in either direction. We really couldn't distinguish, and that's an important limitation of this study because these data are cross-sectional. It may be that individuals who hear more of the alcohol references get scripts in their head and then later on start to drink more. And that's generally what is predicted more by theory. So I think that that's at least health behavior theory, and that's why we hear a lot about that. However, it's also absolutely possible what you said, that you know, people who drink more subsequently might become more interested and engaged in alcohol-related music. And, you know, truthfully, in reality, I think that the truth is a little bit of both.
Yeah, I guess to worry about whether it's causal, I don't know. I mean, it doesn't seem convincing to me that the fact that kids who drink more heavily listen to this stuff means that it's having the reverse influence. Are there studies that would indicate that sort of one-way impact?
Yeah, there actually are. There are studies in the realm of movies and other media, you know, that indicate that it seems to go in one direction and not the other. But in order to do that, you have to have a longitudinal sample, and you have to do a lot of fancy statistics. And so, you know, yes, there are indications of that. But, you know, like I said, it probably is a little bit of both. And it's probably not just a clear-cut picture of one way or the other.
I'd love to hear from listeners. I mean, what do you think of this? Do you think that pop songs, top artists who sing about specific brands of alcohol, that is making the cool factor so much greater that it encourages teens to drink or to consume more alcohol, to engage in binge drinking than they would have otherwise? Do you think that it has the effect of provoking that kind of behavior because kids want to emulate the stars and they make it seem cool? They're singing about reveling in their alcohol, that you know, means kids are going to pattern themselves after that. Or do you think that that's not likely to have such an effect? We're at 866-893-KPCC, 866-893-5722, the AirTalk page, kpcc.org. Renee Hobbs of the University of Rhode Island, who's a specialist on media literacy, thank you for joining us. I mean, what role do you think that, you know, parents and schools have here in helping kids understand what they're listening to?
Well, you know, Larry, it's really interesting. It turns out that kids are growing up in a culture where they're saturated with messages about, you know, how great the altered state is, right? How normal it is to be infused with alcohol. And I feel like it's pretty easy to say to parents, you know, have conversations, and it's more likely that kids will gain the kind of critical thinking skills about media messages and about the way alcohol is represented in music, in movies, in games, if they get a chance to get some sort of analysis skills, sort of asking themselves, like, what's realistic about this depiction of this party scene? What's unrealistic about this party scene? And I think that kids are smart enough to pretty easily evaluate the accuracy and the truthfulness of media messages. It's just that in the context of music, well, that's not how we don't think. Music and thinking, music's a mood-altering experience, right? We thinking about music is and takes an extra step. And that's why we think parents and teachers can play such an important role in helping kids sort of take the extra step to actually talk about and discuss how pop music represents the use of alcohol and what's accurate and what's inaccurate about those representations.
Now, I wonder, looking at historic songs about alcohol, I use the Andrew Sisters, you know, did rum sales go up after, you know, among teens who were listening to them and popular music of the era? You know, what kind of impact does this have? Are kids pretty savvy about it? They you know, understand they're kind of being packaged a lifestyle. They're like kids who listen to gangster rap. They're not apt to go out and shoot places up. You know, it is a kind of a fantasy thing to listen to it. It's not about they themselves living out what they're listening to in the music. 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. We'll continue with more conversation after this news update from Hedy Lynn Hurdies.
Every song's like gold teeth, gray goose dripping in the bathroom, bloodstains, ball gowns, trash in the hotel room. We don't care.
Not unusual these days to hear recording artists name drop the alcohol that's their preference, or perhaps ones they were paid to mention in their songs. Do you think that has an impact, particularly on young people drinking? Do they drink more? Are they more apt to drink? Are they attracted to the brands that are mentioned by their favorite artists? We're at 866-893-KPECC, the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Mike in Burbank, you're on AirTalk.
Hi, I am. I worked in liquor for a while, and I just want to say there's a direct correlation between liquor sales of particular brands and which superstar kind of starts talking about them. For a long time, it was Cristal. Everything was Cristal, and Cristal was crazy, and it sold. You couldn't keep it in stock, even though the price tag is kind of a joke. But then Ace of Spades started becoming the next big thing, and everyone started going nuts over that. And then it was, you know, things Snoop started talking about Chandon. And it's things like that where you have kids that kind of keep hearing this. You see them everywhere. They're in the lock boxes. They're kind of put away. But those are the things you aspire to. You want to have a crazy party. Like, oh, I'm going to go get that Ace. And I see it in terms of sales. It changes all the time, especially on the champagne side. But there is a direct correlation there.
But so I wonder, is it just that they are going for particular brands that they hear the artists they follow sing about? Or, you know, are they drinking more because specific brands are mentioned? And, you know, that does it encourage a level of drinking that wouldn't be there if you didn't have artists who are touting their brand of choice? 866-893-KPECC, AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Jesse in Newport Beach, you're on AirTalk. Jesse, you there? Nope. Okay.
Yes, I am.
Oh, all right. Let's go right. Yeah. Go right ahead, Jesse.
Yeah, my point being, I think it's a good way of branding a product, kind of what the listener was just talking about right now. I mean, I think if you're branding Cristal to a 15-year-old, obviously they're not going to be able to go out and buy a $200 bottle of Cristal. But I think in the big scheme of things, these pop artists and other artists are able to resonate to millions of people out there, which I think in the alcohol trade is just a typical way of branding a product to millions and millions of listeners. I don't think that is a direct correlation to underage drinking per se. I mean, me being 31 years old, if I hear a song and it says something about a glass of whatever it may be, I might be keen on maybe having a glass of that night or that weekend. But to say it promotes underage drinking or younger drinking, I think it's just on a scale of branding good product to the masses.
All right, I appreciate it, Jesse. Thanks very much. Renee Hobbs, do artists get paid, to your knowledge, for specifically singing about a brand of alcohol in a song?
Well, I think the way it works is something like this. They artists sing about the brand, and then the alcohol company comes and provides them with a whole bunch of lovely bennies. So I think that is the typical formula.
That's artists just like our state legislature. They vote for stuff, and then the companies come in and give them contributions.
Indeed, indeed. And I think when we're talking about grown-ups, the last caller is making a great point. Pop music is a great way to increase awareness, and artists are completely free to make reference to anything they want to. But when we're talking about younger kids, we have to recognize that we grow up in a culture where we learn what to value by celebrities, artists, musicians, and athletes. Those folks always have, since time immemorial, shaped the way we think about ourselves and our futures. And so when pop musicians and when hip-hop artists and when musicians build in references to drinking brands of products and the joys of getting smashed and wasted, then we have to understand that for young kids, 10, 11, 12, 13-year-olds, they don't have the skill to be able to recognize what's omitted, to understand the persuasive intent that there's a marketing motive here. For them, that's a lifestyle that they aspire to. And that's why I think Brian's study shows that, you know, a few years later when the kids turn 15, then guess what? Kids who listen to that kind of music have a way more likelihood to engage in binge drinking.
Well, and you're obviously not going to ban artists from singing about brands that they like, but the point for parents and for schools to try and give kids an understanding of what they're hearing, the context of it, what the economics of it are for the artists and for the companies,
That's
probably one of the most helpful things. Dr. Brian Primack, what are your thoughts on the best ways of addressing this with kids?
Well, I completely agree with Renee that this critical thinking is really the cornerstone for me. It's something that we call media literacy, and a media literate individual can still listen to and enjoy music. This has absolutely nothing to do with censorship or with not liking the music. It's just that they think about it in more of an active and engaged way. For example, if a more media literate kid hears a lot of alcohol brands being mentioned in a song, they might turn around and go to Google and figure out whether the artist or the producer has some kind of a financial relationship with the alcohol company, which, of course, has been increasing in today's world. They might also be more attuned to actively thinking about the big differences between how they see alcohol being represented there and how alcohol actually represents to people like me who see patients and actually see the end result of alcoholism in our clinics.
Well, the great thing, because it's sad, but you know, most families have examples of the damage that alcohol can do, and if you talk with your kids about those examples, it gives a very much starker view of alcohol addiction than what you're going to hear in the songs. Dr. Primack and then Renee Hobbs. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say that I completely agree. And there are examples in both directions in popular culture. And I think the thing that's challenging or difficult for me about today's world is that we're losing a lot of the voices talking more about the problems that alcohol produced. I don't know if you remember, about 10 years ago, Ludacris and Mary J. Blige had this beautiful song called Runaway Love. And it was a really dramatic and elegant portrayal of all of the problems that alcohol and drugs brought to an inner city community. But you're not going to see that type of artistry today, because a lot of these same artists are instead, getting paid by the industry. And so there's less of an incentive for them to give that kind of real portrayal and for us to have those available to teach kids about.
We're talking with Dr. Brian Primack, joining us, University of Pittsburgh School of Medicine and researcher in this area. Renee Hobbs, professor and founding director of University of Rhode Island School of Communication and Media. Media literacy is one of her specialties. Professor Hobbs, go right ahead.
Well, it's so interesting because what you each have described are some of the lesson plans that we offer in Pennsylvania to kids in grades 6, 7, and 8. Turns out that middle school is a great time to begin media literacy about alcohol because this is right about the time when kids who might be experimenting are forming some ideas about what is the difference between the attractive and compelling and really beautiful images of alcohol that surround us, funny and playful and really terrifically appealing images, and the more complicated reality that kids may see in their home. And so kids have the cognitive skills by middle school to sort out the difference between how alcohol is depicted in music and in advertising and then what the reality is. It's just that curriculum and lesson plans help give teachers the structure and the confidence to navigate those conversations with sensitivity.
Let me share some more listener comments here. We have Calm in Sylmar says, I've listened to lots of genres of music for 50 plus years. And in country, you hear not just about alcohol, but even hangover cures. It does have an influence, but it flows both ways. Eric writes on the page, it plants the seed to drink, even when you're not thinking about it. All it takes, song coming on the car radio, you can end up drinking later in the day. I think Eric is being straight about that it just sort of gets people thinking about it. Sharon says, I don't see why songs that are obviously targeted at teens and younger should have anything glorifying alcohol and the like in them, unless there's some lesson to be learned from it. 866-893-KPCC. Scott in Burbank, you're on Air Talk. Real quickly, please.
Yeah, hi, Larry. This smacks to me of like the old Joe Camel advertising campaigns. It wasn't directed at children, but who's going to view it? Who's going to see it? Thank you.
All right. Appreciate it, Scott. Katie in Orange says, a lot of students I work with don't know what it means to brush your teeth with a bottle of Jack. They don't understand till they're older. They don't know what they're drinking. They don't discriminate based on brand. This is just selling the behavior of drinking. Any vodka will do, unless the kids are particularly wealthy. Want to thank our guests for talking about the topic of music artists name-checking brands of alcohol in their music. My thanks to Renee Hobbs of the University of Rhode Island and Dr. Brian Primack, physician and professor, University of Pittsburgh School of Medicine and researcher in this area. Have a wonderful afternoon. Stay tuned. Coming up next, BBC NewsHour and a look at the Israeli cabinet breaking off any agreement, any negotiations with the Palestinians. Coming up next, BBC NewsHour. I'll talk with you tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock, and you'll have Film Week on Air Talk at noon as well. We leave you with the Andrews Sisters.